Theodore Roosevelt once said, "Do what you can with what you have, right where you are." You have the ability to start your own business right now, right where you are in your current situation, no matter what it is. The most important quality that you must have for success as an entrepreneur is an intense, burning desire to be in a business of your own. If you back your desire with drive and ambition and surround it with the self-discipline to do what you know you should do, when you should do it, whether you feel like it or not, you'll be on your way. These qualities of character are far more important than the temporary advantages of having plenty of money. Most people who dream of starting their own businesses complain that they would like to do it, but they don't have the money. When I was growing up and right into my 30s, I had a dream of achieving financial independence, just like you. But it seemed that I never had enough money, even to pay my bills. As I looked around me, I found that most people were in pretty much the same situation. Most people spend everything they make and a little more besides. And even if a good business opportunity did come along, they wouldn't be able to take advantage of it. This is why in an earlier session I emphasized how important it is that you begin to save 10% of your net income. This is the measure of how much desire, drive, and discipline you really have. The world is full of people who are wishing and hoping but not doing anything about it. It's only when you are willing to sacrifice in the short term to be prepared for your opportunity in the long term that you begin to make any progress. In this session, I'm going to give you a variety of ways that you can get the money you need to start the business that you want to start. I'll begin by saying that most of the greatest fortunes in America were started on a shoestring. Andrew Carnegie, who built U.S. Steel and became one of the nation's richest men, began as a Scottish immigrant with only 75 cents in his pocket. John D. Rockefeller, who became the world's richest man, began as a clerk earning $3.75 a week. Many men and women started at menial jobs and then managed to pull themselves up through their own efforts to achieve great wealth and total financial independence. It's not the amount of money that you start with, but the amount of ambition and determination that you have that will determine your success. The most important investment you can make in your new business is what is called sweat equity. This is where you invest your time and hard work, 10, 12, or 14 hours a day, 7 days per week, for months or even years. But you can translate this sweat equity into real wealth if you stay at it long enough. The starting point of your new business is the idea or concept of the business. Before you do anything, you have to find something that you can get excited about. You have to find something that you really want to sell, that you really want people to take advantage of. You have to have an idea that is so powerful that you become absolutely determined to bring it to the marketplace and make it a success. The second step is the preparation of a detailed business plan. Please do not underestimate the importance of this document. Don't be in too much of a hurry. Take your time. As Shakespeare said, make haste slowly. Take enough time to do your homework and learn all the details of the business that you're interested in going into before you launch. Once you have your business plan, you'll have a pretty good idea of how much money you need to get started. And even if you have no money at all, there are several things that you can do to get the capital you need to launch your business. The best way to build your business is through the method known as bootstrapping. With bootstrapping, you start small and invest your time rather than your money or someone else's. You work hard to sell your product and then you plow all of your profits back into the business. You only grow the business out of your positive cash flow. You bootstrap or pull yourself up through your own hard work rather than doing it through the raising of capital from outside sources. Businesses that are built on bootstrapping sometimes grow more slowly than businesses that have ample financial resources, but there's a distinct advantage to bootstrapping that other businesses don't have. When you're pulling yourself up hour by hour and dollar by dollar, you tend to be smarter and learn faster in your business than if you have a cushion of cash to fall back on. If you have very little money, you become far more creative in generating sales and keeping your costs under control than you would if you felt that you could absorb a few mistakes. One of the best ways to bootstrap yourself into business is by becoming a multi-level or network marketer. You can get into a multi-level marketing business with very little money out of your own pocket. All you should have to buy is a sample kit and some basic manuals. From then on, you can make sales from your samples, collect the money, pick up the product, and then deliver it to your customer. Many fortunes are being made every year in America by men and women who started with no money at all in a multi-level marketing business, and by virtue of their hard work, were able to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps into financial independence. And here's an important point. Many people think that they're too good to sell multi-level marketing products. They feel that they are too well-educated or too intelligent. Well, I must tell you that I know many people who barely have their high school diplomas who are making $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 per month by working hard in multi-level marketing businesses. There are many doctors, dentists, architects, engineers, and lawyers who are leaving their professions and going into multi-level marketing because they see the tremendous opportunities to start and build a self-perpetuating money machine. The fact is that successful entrepreneurs are never afraid to do what is called dog work. They're never afraid to roll up their sleeves and do the hard, dirty work that's necessary to get any business off the ground. They're willing to sweep floors, load boxes, and make midnight deliveries if necessary, if that's what it takes to build their businesses. Remember, to start your own business with regard to money, all you have to do is have enough to get started. You don't have to have enough money to compete with General Motors or IBM. You just need to do a reasonable, conservative business plan and then gather sufficient capital to launch your enterprise. One of the primary ways that entrepreneurs begin is with savings or the sale of personal assets. Thousands of successful businesses have been started by individuals who sold or mortgaged their homes, sold their boats and their personal possessions, and even liquidated everything they had in order to get the cash to start. You may have life insurance that has a cash surrender value that you can turn in or borrow against. You may have savings bonds put aside for a rainy day. You may have assets around the house that you can sell for the cash that you need to get started. A good exercise is for you to sit down and make a list of every single thing that you own, and then go over the list and decide which of these things are worth giving up in exchange for being able to start and build your own successful business. Remember, everything requires sacrifice, and starting your own business will often require the greatest sacrifices of your life. Many successful businesses in America have been started and built on credit cards and the cash advances that you can get from them. I've met many men and women throughout the country who started and built their businesses by using their credit cards, and I've had to survive on cash advances from credit cards myself on at least two occasions. The third source of money that's available to you is to borrow against something you own. Often a bank will lend you money against your car if it's almost paid off. You can borrow against your furniture or your boat or any other large possession that you own. Many entrepreneurs borrow to the hilt against their homes to get the cash they need to get started. A major source of money to start new businesses is what is called love money. Love money is money that people give to you because they love you. Love money comes from your parents, your closest relatives, your brothers and sisters, and your friends. Perhaps 99% of new businesses in America are started on personal savings and love money, for the simple reason that this is the only place that you're going to be able to raise money without a successful business track record or assets to sell or borrow against. Often your business associates and the contacts that you've developed during the course of your work and your career will take a chance on you by investing in your business. When I've borrowed love money from my friends and relatives at various times, I've personally guaranteed each loan and paid them an above-market rate of interest, such as 20%, for the life of the loan. Sometimes your friends and relatives will want you to sell them a share of your business. This is not a good idea, but if you do, write out an agreement with a sliding scale of share prices that enables you to buy them out at a profit if the business is successful. Here's another important rule. Don't take partners. If you recall earlier, I recommended either a sole proprietorship or an incorporation as the legal structure for your business. I said nothing about partnerships, and for a good reason. Partnerships are the very worst kind of business arrangement. Partnerships have such a high failure rate that you can be almost guaranteed that they will end in disaster. What happens in most partnerships is one person puts in more and one person puts in less. Then, one person works harder and the other person works less. Pretty soon, one of the partners feels that he or she is being victimized, and this is often true. It's very rare to find two people who are willing to work equally hard to make a business successful. One of the partners will invariably want to take more time off during the course of building the business, and this will increase the level of resentment by the partner who stays to work. Business partnerships are often entered into because two people like each other and think it would be a neat idea to start a business together. These business partnerships, when they end, usually ruin the friendship and the relationship between the partners and their families, sometimes forever. The only time that a business partnership is justified is when the partners have complementary skills and ability. One person may be good on the technical side, while another is good on the marketing and sales side. In 1939, for example, William Hewlett and David Packard formed a business partnership which became the Hewlett-Packard Corporation. Each of these men had skills and abilities that the other lacked, but together they formed the ideal top management team, and they went on to build one of the most successful companies in history. But these exceptions are rare. The basic rule holds true. Don't take partners. The reason that you're going into business is so that you can have freedom and autonomy, so that you can be the master of your own ship and totally in control of your financial future. Don't take partners. The next kind of money that you can get is personal loans from your banker based on your credit history and your personal collateral. You can get a personal line of credit or even a home equity line of credit while you're fully employed working at another job. In credit approvals, 2 years is the magic number. When you've been working for a company for 2 years and living in the same place for 2 years, you can suddenly get all kinds of credit, from credit cards and charge cards in department stores up through and including all kinds of personal loans simply backed by your own personal guarantee. The time to put all of your personal loans in place is before you leave your current job. Once you've borrowed the money, they're not likely to demand it back unless you're late in making your payments. So you can borrow to the maximum on just the strength of your name and your repayment history while you're still employed at your current company. And here's another rule. Guard your credit rating as a sacred thing. You have the right to demand a transcript of your complete credit rating from the credit bureau in the city where you live. You should examine your credit rating at least once a year, and most definitely before you start off to build your own business. Your credit rating becomes terribly important when you need to get any kind of financing as an entrepreneur. If there are any black marks on your credit rating, do everything that you possibly can to remove them. Here are some tips for you on how to borrow from your bank, as a business person, and especially as a person building a small business. First of all, remember that entrepreneurs may be risk takers, but bankers are not. Bankers are inherently conservative. They are successful to the degree to which they avoid risk in their lending practices. The purpose of a commercial bank and the job of the lending officer is to make good loans. The banker that you talk to is judged by his superiors solely on the basis of the number of quality loans that he or she makes. If the banker makes a loan that goes bad, and many, many loans to small businesses do go bad, the banker will get a black mark on his record that will affect his pay scale, his position in the bank, and his likelihood of being promoted. So the easiest thing for a bank lending officer to do is to say no, because if he says no, there's no way that he can make a bad loan. He avoids risk by not making the loan in the first place. This is something you must be aware of when you go in. However, the good news is that bankers are in the business of making loans, and if you can convince them that there is no risk in lending to you, they may give you some of the money you need. Once you decide to go into business on your own, select your bank carefully. Interview several bank managers or senior lending officers in advance of opening an account. When you visit the banks, tell them that you're going to be starting a new business and that you're looking for a bank where you can open your accounts and keep your money. Ask them what their policies are towards small businesses and what their lending practices are, and especially their lending authority. Every loan officer and bank executive in every bank branch has what is called a lending limit. This is the amount that they are allowed to approve as a loan without recourse to higher authority. Some junior lending officers have a lending limit as low as $10,000. It's a good idea in your conversations and during your research to ask each of the bankers that you speak to what their lending limit is. They'll usually tell you honestly if you ask them. The most important thing in dealing with a banker is the chemistry between you and the banker. The quality of the interaction, the relationship between the two of you, is perhaps the most important single factor in your decision about which bank to use and which banker to deal with. You must feel very comfortable and friendly toward the banker, and the banker must feel the same way toward you, or you may be getting into more trouble than you're looking for. Many businesses have been shut down by bankers who suddenly decided that they didn't particularly like the business owner. There have been several lawsuits triggered by these seemingly arbitrary behaviors But the bottom line is that your job is to make sure that you get along well with the banker before you take out a loan, and then maintain the relationship afterwards. When you have finished interviewing different banks, you then make your selection and proceed to open your personal checking, your savings, and your company account, and then invite the banker that you've selected out to lunch. During the lunch, tell him about your business plans. Have your completed business plan, your personal financial statement showing your assets, your liabilities, and your net worth, and your next year's budget projections to leave with him. Go over this material briefly and then let him look at it for a few days. Bankers have a process by which they evaluate a business plan. They have access to a good deal of confidential information on different types of businesses, and after you leave, they'll compare your financial projections with what they think would be reasonable to expect in that business or industry. One of the best rules in dealing with the bank is to ask for money when you don't need it. Once you've borrowed the money, repay it promptly. I once knew a successful entrepreneur who began borrowing and repaying money over a period of 3 years before he started his own business. He would purchase a certificate of deposit for $1,000 in a bank. Then he would go to the lending officer and pledge the certificate of deposit as collateral for a $1,000 loan. This is a very easy loan to get approved. He would then take the $1,000 out of the bank and take it across the street and leave it in another bank for 30 days. Then he would come back and repay the entire amount plus interest. He would come back a month later to borrow $2,000, and then later a $5,000 loan, and over the course of 2.5 years, he was able to work up to a $25,000 unsecured loan based on his perfect record of repayment. This is something you might do to build up a strong credit history before you go out on your own. When you open your account, request a personal line of credit. Whenever possible, meet and deal with a bank manager rather than with a lending officer. And if you must deal with a lending officer, ask to be referred to a senior lending officer. Banks look for 5 essential factors when thinking about approving a loan. They are called the 5 C's of loan approval or disapproval. First, they look at your character, your background, and your reputation. They want to know who you are, where you've worked, and what you've done. Where did you go to school, and where do you live? What is your general reputation in the community? Second, they look for your capacity or your ability to repay the loan. Banks place a high value on your proven ability to earn a respectable amount of money. If you've worked and earned a good living for several years, this demonstrates to the bank that you have the capacity to generate sufficient cash flow to repay a personal or business loan. The third factor that the banks look at is your collateral. These are the assets that you have that you can put up to secure the loan. It's not uncommon for a bank to initially require as much as 5 times the amount of the loan in the form of collateral. The very least that any bank will lend against is 2-to-1. This means that you must have $2 worth of collateral that the bank can attach or put a lien on for every dollar that they'll be willing to lend you. If you have no track record at all in business, especially with a particular bank, the bank might require $3 or $4 or $5 of collateral for every dollar that they will lend you. Remember, their primary concern is making good loans. A good loan is one where they get back all their principal plus interest. Banks also look for what is called the primary source of repayment and then the secondary source of repayment. When a business person asks for a business loan, he attempts to prove that the main or primary source of repayment will be the cash flow from the business. The bankers look at that, and then they want to see, although they seldom say it, your secondary source of repayment. In other words, how will the bank get its money back if your business fails completely? Most loan applications from business people are turned down because the bankers are not convinced that the cash flow from the business is sufficient to assure that the bank will be repaid. Whenever possible, be ready to offer a secondary source of repayment, either from the sale of other assets or income from other sources. The fourth factor that the banks look for is your capital. They will want to know how much you are personally planning to invest in this business. They want to know that you have what is called hurting money in the business. They want to see that you have put in a good deal, if not all, of your own assets, and that your own financial future is on the line. Bankers know that they're much more likely to be repaid from the success of the business if your entire financial life depends upon the business succeeding, and they will insist upon it. The fifth factor that the banker looks for is your credit, how well you've repaid any and all loans that you've made in the past. for bankers and lending officers, this is often the most important single part of the equation. It's often hard to assess your character or to have any guarantee with regard to your capacity. Bankers don't like to seize collateral in the event of a loan not being repaid, and even if you have invested a lot of capital in the business, there's no way that they can get their hands on that if things go wrong. The one thing that they can take to their lending committee is your credit rating, and they will do a detailed search of your credit history. That's why it's so important to keep it as clean as a whistle. When you have all of your ducks in a row, and you go to borrow money from your banker, make it easy for him or her to deal with your loan application. When you go in, be prepared with answers to these five questions. Question number one is, how much exactly do you want to borrow? Question number two they will ask is, how do you plan to repay it? Are you going to repay it on a monthly basis, or are you going to repay it in a lump sum? Bankers always look more favorably on loans where there are monthly payments, so take that into your calculations. Question number three is, what will you use the money for? What are you going to do with the money if they lend it to you? The more specific you can be in answering this question, the more likely it is that you will get the loan. You should detail exactly how you plan to spend the money and how this expenditure of money will generate an even greater cash flow with which the loan will be repaid. Question number four is, how will this loan be repaid? Remember to show the banker both a primary and secondary source of repayment. And question number five the banker will ask is, what collateral or security can you provide? Have a detailed list of the collateral that you have available with its fair and honest market value written down next to it. It's not unusual for the banker to ask you to pay to have a lien or trust deed registered against your personal property, or a second mortgage registered against your house. If you have life insurance, the banker will often ask you to assign the proceeds from the life insurance policy to the bank in order to secure the loan. This means that if you die, the life insurance company would pay the bank first, and when the loan balance is repaid, the remainder would go to your estate. You'll hear people recommend that you not give personal guarantees for business loans. Well, this is nonsense. Every small business person has no choice but to sign an irrevocable blanket personal guarantee for a business loan. All banks will insist upon this, and they will not even talk to you if you argue about it for any reason. A personal guarantee says that you are obliged to repay this money no matter what happens to the business and no matter what happens to anything else. Some personal guarantees even outlive bankruptcy. Once you've signed a personal guarantee, you are on the hook for the money, no matter what happens. If you're married, your spouse will be required to sign a personal guarantee also. There is nowhere that you can run and no place that you can hide once you've signed your name to this form to secure a loan. However, this is merely an occupational hazard. Having signed the personal guarantee, you have one more motivation or incentive to make that business succeed. Businesses do not succeed simply because they offer a good product or service and they have a good person selling them. Businesses succeed because of the unshakable persistence and the drive and determination of their owners. When the owner, yourself, has everything on the line, he or she is much more likely to take the necessary steps and make the necessary decisions and sacrifices to assure that the business succeeds. You can reduce the amount of money that you need for your business by leasing the equipment that you require. It's even better for you to rent the equipment for a shorter term if you possibly can. Your first rule should be to conserve cash at all costs. Never buy when you can lease. Never lease when you can rent. And never rent when you can borrow. Never buy new when you can buy used. And whatever agreements you enter into, make them for as short a term as possible. For example, some years ago, when I started a business too quickly, I rashly entered into a 5-year lease for 2,000 square feet of prime office space. However, I was overwhelmed with the 1980-81 business recession, and within 6 months, I was out of money. The landlord had my personal guarantee on the lease and was ready to seize my home, my furniture, and my car in order to get his rent. It was a foolish mistake that I made, and I advise you to learn from it. Fortunately, I was eventually able to negotiate my way out of the payments and sublease the space, but nonetheless, it was a very unpleasant experience that I should never have gotten myself into. When you start your business for the first time, always rent your space on a month-to-month basis. Every landlord will want a longer-term lease or rental agreement, but you must refuse to give it to him. Simply promise that if your business succeeds as you expect, you'll be willing to enter into a longer-term lease at that time. Another way to minimize your cash requirements when you start your business is to use what is called supplier financing. Basically, this method consists of buying your products or raw materials from suppliers and then quickly selling your products to your customers before you have to pay your supplier for them in the first place. Many small companies have gotten started by arranging credit terms with the people who supply them with the essentials for their businesses. In order to do this yourself, you need a clean credit rating and a great personality. You need to go and visit your suppliers and sell them on the idea of extending credit to you. Sometimes they'll insist that you develop a 3 or 6 month payment history with them before they can extend more credit. Whatever it takes, resolve to build up an excellent supplier relationship. Develop personal friendships with the people who can make decisions on your line of credit. If you can buy and then sell before you have to pay for what you bought, everything you make is straight profit. This is often called kiting. Kiting is when you use someone else's money between when you've taken possession of the product and when you actually have to pay for it. Your ability to kite with your suppliers will be totally dependent upon your character and your credibility. That's why it's so important to guard your integrity as a sacred thing. Suppliers talk to each other and you will soon get a reputation that can either help or hurt you. Be sure it is one that helps you. It can make all the difference in how fast you achieve the business success that you desire. Another way to build your business with little cash is to ask your customer to pay for all or part of the order when he or she places the order. Whenever you make a sale, ask for a 25% or 50% down payment or retainer. If the customer tells you that they pay on a 30, 60, or 90-day basis, throw yourself on his mercy and explain that you're a little guy and that you're just starting off and that you would really appreciate it if he or she would pay you in advance. Another thing that you can do if you are selling is that you can factor or borrow against your receivables. For example, if a large creditworthy company places an order with you, but that company doesn't pay for 60 or 90 days, often your bank will advance you as much as 80 or 90% of the amount that that company has agreed to pay. There are independent companies who do the same thing. This is called buying the paper. They will purchase these obligations to pay from you and charge you a high rate of interest in exchange for giving you the money in advance. And here's another very important point. Many entrepreneurs eager to make sales and build their businesses tend to be very sloppy about checking on the credit ratings of their customers. Every single day in America, dozens of businesses go broke because they were not paid for the products and services that they delivered to a customer who ran out of money. Just as you expect your suppliers to do a credit check on you, when you become a supplier to another company, you should do a credit check on them. You should have very firm credit policies in dealing with every new customer. Of course, there are some companies with impeccable reputations that you never need to worry about. But if there is any question, there is no question. If there is any doubt at all about the creditworthiness of an important customer, you owe it to yourself to run a credit check on that company or individual. And if there are any problems with their credit rating, insist that you be paid a down payment in advance and the full amount on delivery. Many people who start businesses think that they're going to raise the money they need from venture capitalists. The fact is that venture capitalists are some of the sharpest business people in America. They look at about 100 business plans before they select one that they are willing to look at more closely. This means that 99% of all applications for venture capital are turned down for one reason or another. Venture capitalists usually look for three things before they'll consider lending to a company. The first is a proven success record of a minimum of 2 years. They want to study the track record of your organization to be sure that you know what you're doing and that you can deliver on your promises. Venture capitalists are very reluctant to fund a brand new business, although they'll do so on occasion if the second and third factors are in place. The second factor that venture capitalists look for is a complete business plan. Venture capitalists judge the business acumen and the quality of the entrepreneur based on how well he or she has prepared a business plan that is honest, factual, accurate, and complete. Many business schools and business colleges are training young business people on how to prepare business plans as a basic part of their educations. As I said before, don't underestimate the importance of preparing a detailed business plan. The third factor that venture capital suppliers look for is a competent management team already in place. In fact, the management team has proven to be the critical factor in the success of many high-tech businesses in the last few years. For example, when the founders of Compaq Computers sat down and put together their business plan and began looking for venture capital, they had already assembled one of the best management teams in the computer industry. This carried an enormous amount of weight and enabled them to get the money they needed for a fast start. Because they carefully thought through everything in advance and they had the skilled executives in place, Compaq Computers went on to become a billion-dollar corporation faster than any other company in American business history. The major downfall in going to venture capitalists for funds is that they will demand a large piece of your company, and almost always they will require that you give them control should things go wrong. Many entrepreneurs have been forced out of their own companies by their venture capital suppliers when they failed to meet their projections. It's a general rule that entrepreneurs are too optimistic with regard to sales and profits. It's much better for you to triple your estimate and come in early than for you to be too enthusiastic and fail to meet your target. Both bankers and venture capitalists will judge the quality of your management by how well you meet the numbers that you've projected for yourself. Bankers especially start to become very nervous when an entrepreneur doesn't achieve his or her goals in sales, cash flow, and profitability. Venture capitalists will often step in quickly to take over the company if you miss one or two of your financial targets. In order to avoid getting yourself into this unpleasant situation, it's far better to be conservative about your projections in the first place. Whenever you borrow money from an institution or a bank or a venture capital firm, one of their requirements will be that you submit complete financial statements every single month. They will then sit down and compare your monthly financial results with your monthly financial projections. If your financial results are below your financial projections, they will start reaching for the plug. When a banker starts to get uneasy about your ability to hit your numbers, the banker's tendency is to panic so as to assure that there is something to grab before the loan is irretrievably lost. If you doubt this, just ask any banker how he or she feels about a business loan to a business person who is not meeting his or her numbers. Another source of financing for a small business is the SBA, or the Small Business Administration. The Small Business Administration makes loans from $5,000 up to about $150,000, although it's known to go considerably higher in certain situations. The Small Business Administration is considered to be a lender of last resort. The only time that the SBA will look at your business plan and your loan application is when you can prove that you've been turned down already by at least two other banks. For most entrepreneurs starting their first businesses, it is fairly easy to get turned down by a couple of banks so that you can then apply to the SBA. Even if you don't borrow money through the Small Business Administration, you should take advantage of its counseling, its advice, and its publications. The SBA has loaned money to many thousands of businesses, and it has some tremendous booklets and publications that can be very helpful to you in planning and organizing your business. If you follow its booklets and recommendations, this can also put you in a position to go to the SBA for capital later, should you have need of it. There's another source of money for small businesses called SBICs. These are small business investment companies, and they're set up with pools of capital from various people to invest in a cross-section of small businesses. Often you can learn about these SBICs through your bank, through the Small Business Administration, and through your Chamber of Commerce. These risk capital groups will often bring you cash, counseling, and advice on how to make your business successful. They'll usually require a piece of your business, though not as big a piece as a full-time venture capitalist. There is one other source of capital for you to consider when you're starting and building your business. This is called an angel. An angel is a private individual who has money to invest and who is willing to take a chance on a small company. Often these angels are successful business people or even retired business people who've sold their businesses and who have substantial amounts of cash available. You can sometimes find these angels by putting the word out that you're looking for an equity partner in your business. Sometimes your banker will recommend an angel to you. Often you'll have to pay a referral fee for being put in touch with one of these private lenders, but many successful businesses have been built as a result of the capital inflow from a single investor. You can look in the classified section of your newspaper under the categories of businesses, investments, money available, and so on. There's another place where you might get the money to start your own business, and that's from your current employer. If you're doing a good job for your company, if you're making a valuable contribution, your employer might stake you in your own business. If your employer knows that you're going to go off on your own and your employer has a high level of respect for you, he or she will be willing to help you in a variety of ways, as long as you're not going to be competing with each other. Many successful entrepreneurs today are starting their businesses with money, resources, advice, and introductions provided by the employer that they've just left. This makes sense when you realize that there are very few people who know your character, your ability, and the results that you can deliver better than the person you've been working for the last few years. One of the best attitudes towards starting and building your business is to treat your business like a turnaround. A turnaround is a business that has gotten into financial trouble through mismanagement. When a company gets into a tough financial situation, the top management is often replaced by what is called a turnaround specialist. This is an individual who can come in and act quickly to save the business. If you treat your company like a potential turnaround all the time, you'll always be doing the things that assure maximum profitability at minimum cost. Some of the things that a turnaround specialist will do when a business is running out of cash and is unable to make its payments or its payroll are the following. First, the specialist will make an objective assessment as to whether or not the conditions or declining sales are long-term or short-term. The specialist will always assume the worst and proceed as though the worst were going to happen. If sales are declining dramatically, the specialist will assume that this is part of a larger trend and will act accordingly. Second, the specialist will immediately act to preserve and guard cash at all costs. Throughout your entrepreneurial career, you must treat cash as king. Hold on to it carefully and part with it reluctantly. A business with cash can survive almost any storm, but a business that runs out of cash can go under in a matter of a few days. The specialist will then halt payments to suppliers wherever possible and accelerate payments from customers wherever possible. The turnaround specialist will even give discounts to customers for early payment. You should do the same thing. Get the longest possible terms in paying your suppliers and give the shortest possible terms in collecting from your customers. Give them 2% off if they pay within 15 days. Many companies are set up to automatically pay early in order to take all discounts. Number four, and this is something that's vitally important to you in any case, if you run into financial trouble, visit your banker immediately and tell him the situation. Never let your banker first find out that you're in trouble by finding out that you've missed a payment. Be sure that your banker is the first to know. I've spoken with several bankers on this subject, and they all say that their first instinct will be to do everything possible to help the business person who lets them know in advance. But when they find out after the fact, they tend to become both scared and angry, and you can lose a lot of your ability to negotiate with them. One of the things that has saved me with my bankers when the cash dried up was to renegotiate my loans temporarily and pay interest only. I would suspend all principal payments for a certain period of time. You see, as long as the borrower is making interest payments, the loan is considered a good loan on the books of the bank. The bankers will almost invariably allow you to go to interest-only payments if that's what you need to do in order to weather a period of cash shortage. The fifth thing that a specialist would do if negative conditions continue is to begin to lay off all non-essential staff and eliminate all non-essential expenses. They will cut everything to the bone rapidly. What you should learn from this is the motto, frugality, 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 and again frugality. In building your company, you should never have any non-essential staff or non-essential expenses. You should insist on spending only what you absolutely have to enable the business to function and to generate revenues from sales. The next step a turnaround specialist would take is to sell off assets as rapidly as possible. If you ever get into financial trouble, do an assessment of the assets you'd be willing to sell in order to save your business. Then, begin to sell them immediately. Don't wait until it's too late and you have to let things go at bargain basement prices. The two major reasons why businesses fail are 1, lack of sales, and 2, poor cost control. A loss of momentum in the sales department will cut off the incoming cash flow, causing the business to strangle. Poor cost control will cause too much money to be going out the back door, and even though sales are strong, the company can still go broke. The primary reason for poor cost control is too much inventory. Too much inventory is being ordered and too little of it is being sold. Once you've taken possession of the inventory for resale, it's usually hard to give it back. It's essential that you run your business lean and mean, spending only what you have to spend in order to move forward, and carry only the inventory that you need in order to supply your customers in a timely fashion. Finally, the turnaround specialist would get in and roll up his sleeves and take control of all income and expenditures. He would insist upon approving every expense and signing every check. Nothing that did not absolutely have to be spent would be authorized. the turnaround specialist would be very hard-minded, even ruthless, with regard to outflows of cash. One of the smartest attitudes that you can develop is the attitude of the turnaround specialist. Continually look at your business from the outside and think of ways that you could make it more efficient. Think of ways to increase the cash flow and to cut down on the cash outgo. Practice frugality in everything you do, and don't lose money. The purpose of this session has been to open your mind to the fact that you don't need a lot of money to get started in a business of your own. What you need more than anything else is guts. If you want to be financially independent, you'll never achieve it working for someone else unless you become a senior executive of a large corporation. The most certain route to riches in America is to start and build your own successful business. And don't let lack of money hold you back. Many of the most successful businesses in America have been built by men and women who started with nothing or even deeply in debt. They didn't let that get in their way. They were so determined to take their idea for a product or service to the marketplace that they couldn't be stopped by a little thing like shortage of cash. They started their business in their basement or on their kitchen tables. They worked out of their homes and their cars. They worked in borrowed and rented spaces and in cold offices and warehouses. They negotiated with their bankers, their suppliers, and their customers to keep the cash coming in until they finally got the business off the ground. They persisted and they persevered and they hung in there until finally they started to make the profits they knew were possible. And they finally made it to business success and financial independence. What anyone else has done, you can do as well. If someone else you know has started his or her own business, if you really want to, you can start your own business too. If you are really serious about getting rich in America, and the idea of entrepreneurship appeals to you, now is the time to begin taking steps to launch yourself in your own business. It will be the greatest adventure of your life. Now here's an exercise for you. Go through this session again and write out all the different ideas that you can think of to generate the cash you need to start your business. Look over all of your personal assets and assess your friends and relatives for how much you think you might be able to borrow from them. A good idea is to call up these people and tell them that you might need to borrow some money in the future, and would they be able to lend you a certain amount of money if you asked for it? This will give you a good idea of the resources that you can draw upon. Another good exercise is to get your credit rating into excellent shape and to begin building up your credit history at the bank that you choose to deal with. Take out short-term cash loans based on your character and your collateral, and then pay them back. Arrange for personal letters of credit, and if you have a home, if possible, take out a home equity line of credit. Make all of your necessary financial arrangements before you leave the security of your current job. Put yourself into field position for what they call the long ball. Every minute, every hour that you spend preparing and strategizing for the launching of your new business is going to save you 10 minutes or 10 hours in making your business successful.